Welcome into Boulevard Baseball Tonight. It is definitely not nighttime, but I am Sean Collins, and it is Mother's Day. It looks very nice outside for the time being. We're going to talk about the Kansas City Royals, and, well, there isn't really any way around it. We knew heading into yesterday that it would be a tough one. The Royals had to be really active at the plate early against Zach Eflin, and that didn't really happen. He's now the first MLB player this season with two complete games as he went 9 strong, allowing 4 hits on 7 strikeouts. The Royals still have a chance to win this series, but yeah, there will be a couple ways that, you know, that today will pose for a good chance to do that, but the Phillies are a good team, and I don't think the Royals have their best lineup going today. And that's when we're going to get into the starting lineups. The top of the lineup looks pretty similar to what you're used to. It's going to be Whit Merrifield leading off, but he is going to be in right field today. We'll talk a little bit about that more later in the show. Alberto Mondesi is going to be at shortstop. Alex Gordon in left. Hunter Dozier at first base. Jorge Soler is going to be DHing today. Kelvin Gutierrez is back at third base. Chris Owings is going to be at second base, so there's that swap with Merrifield. Cam Gallagher is going to be in today for the catcher spot. And it's going to be Billy Hamilton in center. And when I was talking about this lineup today, it's the bottom of the lineup that doesn't look great for the Royals. That Chris Owings, Cam Gallagher, Billy Hamilton. That's not really terrifying if you're a starting pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies. But they have a new pitcher coming in today. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. But the Phillies are 22-16, and the Royals are 14-26 after their loss last night. They're going to have a good chance to come back today, but I honestly think that the bottom of the line, I think Chris Owings, Cam Gallagher, Billy Hamilton, I think they're probably going to need 2 hits from that group of 3 tonight to get a victory. And I honestly think that's possible, but I think that's what it's going to take for the Phillies lineup. It's going to be Andrew McCutchen. He's DHing tonight, and he's also leading off. Gene Segura is going to be at shortstop. Bryce Harper in right field. Rice Hoskins is going to be at first. JT Realmuto is going to be catching. Odubel Herrera in center. Cesar Hernandez at second base. Michael Franco at third. And Nick Williams will be in left. This Phillies lineup is pretty solid. Bryce Harper doesn't have the best average he's ever had, but he's still very dangerous. JT Realmuto is starting to get hot as well, and Cesar Hernandez is batting well. Pitching for both teams, you have Jake Junis today for the Royals. He hasn't had his best season so far. He's at a 5.52 ERA with 36 strikeouts, and he's 3-3. He isn't really the same as he was last year, but he gave up 5 runs and 3 homers in his last outing, but he was good the 2 starts before that. I think he only gave up a few hits in about 11 and a half innings, and Junis needs to get back today, and I think that that's possible. And here's the big news for the Royals today is that they're going against Cole Irvin, and if you haven't heard of him, that completely makes sense. As this is the best news for the Royals today. They are facing a guy coming up from AAA, so he hasn't seen this lineup, and he's replacing Vince Velasquez. While he is from the minors, he was pitching very well there. He was 2-0, 2.25 ERA with Lehigh Valley. But, this is a really good opportunity. I'm going to be asking our guests later today, especially former Royal Mike McFarlane, what kind of your go-to is whenever you're facing a new guy and what that's going to be like for them. And the ways that they can take advantage of that. Now let's get into the weather. I'm kind of the bringer of bad news here, I think. I'm not 100% sure. It's in the low to mid-50s all afternoon, and there's a decent amount of chance for thunderstorms throughout. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some rain delay today, but I think baseball overall is going to be happening since it's the afternoon. So, I'd be really surprised if it rained for like 10 straight hours. I think that's pretty unlikely. Since this is all in the afternoon, I think it should go. Bring an umbrella, bring a poncho, bring a towel for your seat, whatever it's going to take. Now let's go into the injury report. There's not going to be any Lucas Duda in the lineup today. That's not any news. Obviously, you heard that from the starting lineup. This is kind of standard stage right now for the Royals. I think Maldonado is fine, but Cam Gallagher is obviously in. I think it's kind of just his turn to be in the lineup, and they're getting Maldonado some rest. When we come back, I'm going to be going into the clubhouse report. We're going to hear from Ned Yost and Brad Keller. He had a really rough outing last night. It wasn't the worst outing you've ever seen from a Royals pitcher this season, but when you're going against a guy that's throwing shutouts, that it's not going to work. So we'll hear from that when we come back. We are back here on Boulevard Baseball tonight. We're going to do the clubhouse report now. A lot of this is just going to be on Brad Keller. We're going to hear from Ned Yost about it. The Royals kind of got smacked yesterday. They lost 7-0. Brad Keller went 5 innings, and he gave up 5 hits and 6 runs, 5 earned runs. This just wasn't his best outing. He only had 3 strikeouts through, and the guy on the other side was looking really good. So let's hear from Ned Yost.
Any residual effect from missing that start, you think that could be have an impact on him?
No, he's fighting mechanics. You know, he's fighting his mechanics, which in turn, keeps him fighting his command. So, the walks hurt him, especially the walks to the bottom of the order, guys. But just battling through it. I mean, really got through 5 right there, and we were still kind of in the game a little bit. Had a chance, to get back in it in the 4th when they loaded the bases, and we just couldn't take advantage of that opportunity. But, just fighting needs to be more consistent in his mechanics. His head's flying. He's yanking pitches a little bit, and it's something that he's been working on and continues to work on.
What was so difficult about Eflin tonight?
He was the exact opposite. He had 2 really good fastballs, a 2-seamer, sinker, good 4-seamer. He pitched up and in, down and away, up and in with the 4-seamer, down and away with the 2-seamer, and a really good slider. Good command, had 2-to-1 strike-to-ball ratio. He just threw the ball well.
After Keller's first 2 innings, did you think, okay, maybe he's going to settle in here?
After the first 2 innings. And then, after the 2nd innings, when he started to really labor and start to, battle the mechanics, they started to get away from him a little bit and, just battled it.
Has Cal mentioned to you, too, about the head yanking and that sort of thing the last 4 starts or 3 starts or just recently?
No, just today.
Okay. Dozier and Soler both get out of there okay with their pitches?
Yes. Okay, just, and they both stay in the game? They both play?
Sometimes those can balloon later on?
No.
As well?
No, they're not flowers or seeds. They're fine.
I wish I, could take it easy on Ned Yost and the Royals here, but having a guy like Brad Keller just pop up with mechanics issues, something like tossing his head whenever he's throwing a pitch, that's just not a good sign at all. That makes me think that something else was bothering him. I don't know if it's an injury or something, or he maybe had a headache. I don't know, but that's a pretty uncommon thing, I would think, to just all of a sudden have a professional pitcher start doing. It's not a good sign, and you're definitely going to lose when Zach Eflin's on the other side. And he's pitching, and he's been so hot lately. And we knew that it was going to be a really tough game yesterday when I was talking about it on this show, that, they can't really, they probably couldn't afford to give up 4 runs yesterday, let alone 7. So now we're going to hear from Brad Keller, we're going to hear from Brad Keller himself.
Yeah, no, I mean, pretty spot on. I felt like I kept yanking my head and pulling off a lot of pitches. And, we had a really good game plan going into the game, just didn't quite execute exactly how we wanted to. Tried going on guys, yanked it, and got back over the middle, and they didn't miss them. So just work on it again in the bullpen, go at them in 5 days.
The first 2 innings, did it feel pretty good to you, though? I mean, you got through that pretty easily.
Yeah, no, I felt really good. Like I said, good game plan, body felt well, just got into a little funk in the 3rd inning and started yanking my head, trying to put too much pressure on myself, and started yanking pitches and throwing myself back into a rut. So
has that been kind of the issue too the last 2 or 3 starts, or is that they were different mechanical issues before?
It's kind of been the same thing. It's just an evolving thing that we're trying to stop real quickly. We feels like we stop one thing and then cause another thing, but we'll get it right and we'll get back on the horse.
So it has been different things than you're saying?
I mean, it's essentially the same thing, but it's causing me to do some other stuff. So once we settle that down, then everything will be fine.
I'm not a manager, and obviously I'm not a physical trainer or anything like that, but I have suggested before that the Royals possibly try a bullpen game, and I know that's, like, terrifying because the Royals' bullpen isn't very good, but the Royals aren't very good, so, like, I think that would be okay, and this might be a good opportunity if you gave Brad Keller a start off, give him that week or so to try and figure out his mechanics, because he's having different problems from game to game. That's probably not a good sign, because if he's focusing on fixing one thing, it means he's probably not focusing on making sure all of the other things are going well with his mechanics, and that's typically going to end up in a loss anyways, I would think. I could be absolutely crazy or totally wrong about this. I'll be honest about that, but I feel like you should try something, especially with a pitcher like Brad Keller, who last year showed that he could be a really dominant rookie. He can be really consistent. He can throw strikes and get strikeouts. He can pitch deep into games, and he can win you games with his ability to throw on the mound, and you want that back, especially when you're not a good baseball team. He's one of your young guys, and you want to be able to keep him here, and I doubt the Royals want to send him down at all if he were to continue struggling, so that's an idea. No, it's totally fine if no one listens to me, or if someone has a counter argument, that is totally fine. If you're yelling at me in your car, that's understandable. Sometimes weird things happen, and weird things definitely happened today in baseball history some years ago, so let's go to the milestones.
Now we open up the history books and look at the milestones of the past.
1978, again, this is brought to you by Inspire Therapy. This was at Royal Stadium. A potential game-ending routine fly ball to right center becomes an Amos Otis walk-off inside the park home run when Reggie Jackson and Mickey Rivers collided in the outfield. This misplay turned from what seems like a sure save into a really devastating loss for the defending world champions. This is, sometimes it... You know, weird things happen on the other side, and sometimes weird things happen for you. This was a opportunity where the Royals got to win a baseball game that they probably shouldn't have, and maybe more things will happen like that in 2019. Can't promise anything, but I thought this one was fun. When we come back, we're going to circle the bases. Welcome back to Boulevard Baseball Tonight. We are here for Circling the Bases, and yesterday for this segment I said that I wasn't going to talk about Nicky Lopez, and I really didn't, because I didn't want to talk about anything until there was anything new on this subject, and there is now. Jeffrey Flanagan of MLB.com did some reporting. There's a story about it on MLB.com if you want to read the full thing, but I'm going to give you kind of the rundown of what I learned from it. Because there's a Ned Yost take in here that I think makes sense and then doesn't make sense from the events that happened today. The issue here with bringing up Nicky Lopez is that he plays second base or shortstop, and that's taken up by Mondesi and Whit Merrifield like 90% of the time, 95% of the time now. Whit can play the outfield, obviously, because he's in the outfield today, and it's Chris Owings that's in at second base, but... You know, Whit Merrifield has struggled with injuries to his lower body out there when he's been playing in the outfield. And those kind of stopped when he was back at second base and playing there more often. So I think that that's where they want him to be. They can't really afford to lose Whit Merrifield's offense either, obviously. He's one of those top five guys at the top of the order. And that's been the solid part of this team. And when they win games offensively, you know, it's because of those top five guys in this order. They really can't afford to lose that because it'll end up losing more baseball games, and the Royals obviously don't want to do that. So their dilemma here is they don't want to bring up Nicky Lopez for like two games in a two-week span or something like that. Whenever Whit Merrifield doesn't play or play, they decided to play in the outfield. If they bring him up, they want him to play often. They want him to be a daily guy so he can actually get those reps. And you don't want to toss a new guy, I'm assuming, into the outfield who doesn't play the outfield. Whit Merrifield does, but I know people don't like the whole Chris Owings thing, and I think that makes sense because he's batting like 143, and that seems to be the only number next to his name always. I don't know how that works. It feels like, you know, there'd be some fluctuation there, but that in itself is pretty impressive. They want to see young guys come up, and that's Nicky Lopez. And I do think that Ned Yost's concern is pretty valid here because you don't want Lopez to just come up and play some other position. You don't want to hurt Whit Merrifield, And, you know, you don't want him to play twice in a two-week span. But then Whit Merrifield is playing in the outfield today. So, it's kind of weird to hear that. I'm sure that Whit Merrifield will be back at second base for the next, like, five or six games. But if he is in the outfield for, like, three games, or for four games in a two-week span, I think people would be really wondering why Nicky Lopez didn't get to come up and play baseball for this team. I probably agree. So I'm saying as long as the talk backs up what Ned Yost said and they play Whit Merrifield at second base for like 95% of the time for the rest of the season, then that is totally understandable. They're going to have to find some way to play Nicky Lopez at some point because I don't think he can just play in the minors until he's 39 and retire with an illustrious minor league baseball career. That's not going to happen. So what is it that they do? Do you give Mondesi a couple days off in between when you have Merrifield playing? Can Mondesi play in the outfield? I don't know how consistent he could do that, and he's an incredible shortstop, so I'm not sure that that's a good idea either. I just know that Chris Owings isn't a very good professional baseball player right now, and there feels like there could be some sort of answer to that because they have pieces where they're either young guys that they can play or they have very talented players, so it feels like there's a hole that can be fixed. Not sure what the answer is. It's unfortunate that Whit Merrifield has been, you know, not feeling good with his lower body whenever he plays in the outfield often. If that were ever to change, I am assuming that this discussion would change. So maybe Whit Merrifield plays second base for the next 3 weeks straight. And then he's thinking, you know, I'm feeling like I could play the outfield for a week if you want to bring up Nicky Lopez. I don't know if they have those kinds of discussions, but that could be something. Whit Merrifield decides, yeah, this week I'll play five games in the outfield. I'm feeling pretty good. My legs are fresh. My hips feel good. My feet feel good. Sure, call up Nicky Lopez. We'll have him play second base for the week, and let's see what this kid's got. I feel like that's probably best case scenario for the Royals at some point this season, and I don't know if that is going to happen. I just know that you don't really want to see Nicky Lopez sit, and he's like the prospect that everybody talks about. I feel like that's a pretty good option. I honestly came up with that solution on air just like thinking about it, but it's possible. We're going to hear from our guests when we come back. On deck, we got Curtis Seabolt, and for our closer, we got former Royal Mike McFarlane. We're going to ask them about Brad Keller. We're going to ask them about the pitchers, what's going on, what do they think of the Nicky Lopez situation, how do you handle a pitcher you've never seen before and who has never seen you. Those will be the kinds of things that we discuss when we come back. I am back here on Boulevard Baseball Tonight. Again, I'm Sean Collins. I am joined here by Curtis Seabolt. Curtis, how are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you?
Excellent. I hope you're enjoying your Mother's Day so far. I'm going to ask you first off, what's the deal with Brad Keller? What are you seeing right now, and what do you think can change or would be good for the Royals to do about him?
Well, what you're seeing with Brad Keller is what we've seen in every start except for opening day. He can't throw strikes. Yeah. He's now, in opening day, he was very good. 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 Ks. Since then, he has allowed at least 3 walks in 8 consecutive starts. That is the longest streak for a Royals pitcher in 25 years. The last pitcher to do that for the Royals was Tom Gordon back in 1994. The club record is 13. He's got an outside shot at that. Wow. But he's already in the top five. So, and you keep hearing the comments from him in the post game. You know, I keep jerking my head. I get a mechanics flaw. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing that for a while about Brad Keller, and at some point that needs to be fixed. And whether that's him or whether that's the pitching coach, something needs to change because that's just not sustainable. Success is not sustainable. You can't just keep putting guys on. He's walking 5.5 guys per 9 innings, one of the highest rates in the major. So he seems to have good stuff, seems to have a occasionally good strikeout stuff, although not very recently. But when you're walking three and striking out three every, or walking four and striking out four almost every time you're on the mound, you're not gonna win. And subsequently, he's given up. Actually, hasn't pitched too terribly bad considering those numbers. But the walks have to come down, or it's just not going to work for anybody.
Do you think that this is a scenario where giving Brad Keller a start off and, you know, giving him those extra, whatever it is, going to be 4 days that he wouldn't have normally gotten, do you think that is any sort of help with him, or do you think that he needs to keep pitching?
I don't think it's a mental thing necessarily. I mean, I don't think you get better by not pitching.
Okay.
I mean, I think you've got to work out what you're going to work out, you know, in your between starts, and, you know, your mound days or whatever they call them, when the guys are throwing on the side, you know, on the side. I think you only get better at that by continuing to go out there and do it. So he's going to have to work this problem out himself on the mound, but you know, as I just stated, you can't keep walking five and a half guys per nine and expect to win. And that's been that kind of rears its ugly head, because you've got he's the one guy they were counting on to kind of be the guy this year, and and to this point he really hasn't. And the other guy they were hoping for, he's going today, has kind of had some issues of his own of late. So the Royals 1-2 punch. You've heard of Keller and Junis coming into this year, almost like you used to hear, you know, Gordon and Butler and Hosmer and Moustakas. It was like they were together. They were the Batman and Robin of the Royals pitching staff for the next 5 years, or 5 or 10 years. And neither one of them has really done that to this point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you thought of Jake Junis and how you felt about him before his start today. Do you think it's any sort of help that they're playing against a guy that's coming up from AAA? Do you think that that's meaningful at all?
I don't think.
Go for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to time your question there, and I
jumped right.
Kind of bit. Sorry about that, Sean. Well, I don't think he's not facing the pitcher.
Yeah.
The Royals lineup is, which helps. And I got some comments about that as well. But Junis is not going to benefit from that. He seemed like he kind of got things together the two previous starts before he went in Houston. He'd given up at least three runs in each of his first five starts, but kind of settled down over those two starts against the Rays. Three earned runs over 11 plus, that's workable. Four walks isn't great, but eight strikeouts is a little better. But he kind of got bombed against the Astros, which is going to happen there. I mean, if you're a home run guy, and he has been a home run guy at times, the Astros are going to get you there. He needs to keep the ball in the ballpark today. If he can keep the ball in the ballpark today, I think he's got a chance to pitch a pretty good outing today against the Phillies.
Them facing a guy who hasn't pitched much, Cole Irvin, who's coming up from AAA today at Lehigh Valley. What are your thoughts on how the Royals tackle that? Is this advantage Royals here, do you think?
Well, the top of the lineup is going to probably have to get it done. Ned Gillis is trotting out what you'll sometimes see on day games. I call it the free inning lineup, where you've got the bottom of the lineup. When you've got Owings, Gallagher, and Hamilton, that's going to make things a little easier for the rookie starter, the guy in his debut. The top five guys they're a concern. The sixth batter, treat with caution. He's got monster power, and then you can kind of navigate your way through the easier inning. Now, no inning's easy for a guy who's making his major league debut, but he certainly would seem to have a little stretch where he can maybe relax a little bit. But I think a lot of times you'll see one or two things from a guy in his debut. He either comes out and no one has a book on him, and if he's got stuff, he might fool some guys. And you look up and you're like, wow, this kid's giving up two runs or, you know, over five plus. But I think the way the top of the lineup is performing, my gut feeling would be that they're going to get to him early, and it's going to be and have a 3-0, 4-1 lead or something along those lines. And it's going to be incumbent upon them to continue to pile on runs, and for Jacob Junis to keep the Phillies off the board long enough to get to get at least deep enough in the game where they could just use their supremium, their supreme bullpen guys, and not have to go yeah. too much longer. But I'd say, and I'll take a good, a decent 5 or 6 hitter lineup against a major league debut guy probably most days. So decent shot for the Royals. So I think I would certainly favor them in this game.
I would agree with that. Just with the Nicky Lopez news that kind of came out yesterday, Ned Yost kind of gave his comments about him and the dilemma that it would be in bringing him up, trying to put him into the infield when you have Mondesi and Whit Merrifield there already. What are your thoughts on Nicky Lopez, and do you have any idea or have any ideas yourself on a way that they could get him up here at some point during the season?
If he's married to having Whit Merrifield the second base, mm-hmm. that does kind of create a spot where he can't really play. But what's interesting about that is that he suddenly now Merrifield is the second baseman. I mean, he's moving him all over the field for the first month, and now that Nicky Lopez is seems to be ready to come up, suddenly there's not a spot for him.
Yeah.
If he's going to say that Merrifield's second baseman, that's fine. But he's not today. Mm-hmm. Chris Owings is playing second base today. So why? This would be a day where Nicky Lopez could play. And I see what he wants him to just get up here and play, not come up here and then sit.
Yeah.
And he probably wouldn't put him in right field like he does, or occasionally center field like he does Owings. So mm-hmm. I understand that part of the equation. But if you're going to say that Whit Merrifield's your second baseman, and so Nicky Lopez can't come up, Whit Merrifield's got to play second base every day, doesn't he? And that's the inconsistency with which the franchise seems to view Whit Merrifield that causes me the biggest question marks with Nicky Lopez. I think we'll see him up here at some point, but as long as he's married to Whit Merrifield as the second baseman, probably not going to see him for a while.
Yeah, I thought it was slightly odd that Yost was commenting about the lower half of Whit Merrifield's body kind of getting, you know, injured and bruised, whatnot, whenever he plays in the outfield, and that he feels soreness and tightness whenever he plays out there, and then they throw him out there the next day. So,
there have been some strange things. I mean, the Chris Owings thing to me is just a mystery.
Yeah.
I understand that Yost likes veteran players, but he just doesn't give you the best chance to win. He's a serviceable player in the field, but that bat's just not going to help you. And when he struck out looking on 3 pitches against a position player in Houston or a DH in Houston, I kind of thought, you know, that's the kind of thing that's mm-hmm. just likely to make Ned Yost angry enough that he's going to go, you know what, you're riding the pine.
Yeah.
But he played the next day. So apparently there's something in Chris Owings that Ned Yost sees that I don't.
Well, he's really fast, supposedly, and then, you know, we can't really tell because he doesn't get on base. I agree with
Billy,
you.
Billy Hamilton's fast, but he gets on base 27,000 times. That'd be much good.
Yep, absolutely. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on today. Just because I always ask whoever I have on deck this, if you were Royals manager for 24 hours and you could make one decision and no one would be able to do away with it, what would you do?
Wow, one decision. It would be to get rid of the gold-numbered Friday night uniform.
Okay, how come?
I think those have run their course. The Royal standard white home uniform is mm-hmm. one of the 5 or 6 or 7 best uniforms in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I got why the gold uniform was there. The thing was kind of nice the first couple of years, but it's played out to me. So go back to the standard blue and white.
Are you thinking the Royals won't win the World Series this year, and that's why they shouldn't wear the gold?
that could be what it was. You know, the baseball gods are angry that they brought those things out, and they haven't won since then. But, win it again, you can wear it again. But to me, it's time to go back to the basic royal blue and white. It's a winning look to me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Again, this has been Curtis Seabolt. Curtis, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Take it easy and attempt to enjoy Royals baseball.
Will do. Thanks, Sean.
Yep, no problem. When we come back, we're going to talk to former Royal Mike McFarland. We're going to talk about some of the same things. And I'm going to ask him, because he was a catcher, just what, you know, how do you help new pitchers whenever they're coming up, if we're thinking from the Phillies perspective, and what are you trying to do if you're the Royals against a new pitcher at the plate? We'll have that when we come back. Welcome back to Boulevard Baseball Tonight. I'm Sean Collins. We are fortunate enough today to get to close out the show with former Royal Mike McFarland. Mike, how are you doing today?
Trying to enjoy Mother's Day, Sean, same as you.
Absolutely. I've gotten to talk to you, it seems like, three or four times now, and it's always a good time. I feel like we actually have a day that's really, really good for you. The timing seemed to match up, and there seems to be good insight that I think that you could add. So the Royals are facing a pitcher today that they've never seen before, but also this guy has never seen them. As a catcher, whenever you were working with a pitcher that was coming up or from AAA or someone you hadn't worked with before or hadn't seen much, what kind of things that would you do to help them get into a rhythm or feel comfortable in a game like this?
Well, back before things have became so hypersensitive with the the analysis, analytics, and everything that goes into it, the hours of tapes of what pitch on what count. Basically, back before this time, you would go with his strengths. You would talk to him and see what he's comfortable with. And then, being a veteran catcher, they would more than likely defer to your pitch calling.
Yep.
You would go down and catch the pitcher early on if you haven't caught him before, and see what works, see what pitch looks good, what has movement and action, and try and identify something that you can call on, a pitch that you can call on, and get it to where the kid you want it, and have the kid throw it there. So, when they're not facing a team, not knowing them, they got a lot of information, especially now with the shifts and things like that. And basically, you just try and go the best route you can to pitch into your defense out there.
Well, let's hope he didn't listen to anything you just said, and isn't ready for today. you had some really solid years at the plate yourself. With RBIs and home runs, and your batting average was pretty strong for a lot of the years of your career, where you got to play for a long time. Can you just give me, insight of, whenever you're going up against a pitcher that is, brand spanking new, he hasn't had much time in the league, what were the things that you were doing to try and make them feel uncomfortable early in the game?
Well, the one thing you know about him is he has a fastball.
Yep.
So everything's going to get keyed off of that. And then where you're dependent upon, unless you were the leadoff hitter, which you'll probably see Whit take a few pitches, try and identify the movement. And even in the minor leagues now, there's so many cameras down there. You have a pretty good scattering report on the action on the kid's pitch, what type of significant breaking ball he has. But just try and get into account. You're not going to ask the kid to throw too many 2-0 breaking balls. You're going to try and get him to throw strikes and then expand. So, as a hitter, you would go up there in those fastball counts and look for a pitch up in the zone and try and drive it and, use his inexperience and his nerves, possible inability to locate against him, and, stay aggressive with your approach of what you're trying to do, not necessarily so concerned with what he is.
Absolutely. And on the topic of Brad Keller, who's been struggling mechanically, he had head jerking issues yesterday. What would you do whenever pitchers were having mechanical issues, and they seemed to be pretty inconsistent in what their mechanical issues were for a couple weeks or something like that? What was your role in assisting that guy, or is that completely up to managers and the guy?
No, during the game, call timeout. That was the first time that I really saw him, kind of walk around the mound a lot. You never see him spike pitches like you saw him. You saw him shaking an awful lot with the catcher Maldonado. It's one of those things that he's out of sorts. And if he feels out of sorts physically, he's definitely out of sorts mentally. So you try and get one of those six timeouts and try and calm things down and go out there and tell him, look, just trust me, focus on the target. Let's get into a little bit of a rhythm. I would definitely try and pick up the tempo so he's not pacing and walking around the mound. Try and push the throttle down a little bit. Get on the mound and throw it. Less thinking, the better. And let some of those reactions that he's been doing since he's 8 years old take over and get back to throwing strikes. So that was the first time I could honestly say I've seen him out of whack, definitely, last night.
Absolutely. Just talking about Nicky Lopez, and the Royals obviously would love to bring up this guy, but the positions that he plays are kind of filled up. What do you see as like the best opportunity to get up a guy, you know, when it's going to be Whit Merrifield and Mondesi, you know, up the middle of the field for them, and they don't want Whit playing in the outfield too often? Do you have any insight on a solution that the Royals could find here?
Well, I don't think they're going to bring Lopez up anytime soon. In fact, you probably are going to see Bubba Starling up before Lopez.
Okay.
One, you don't want to start the clock on Lopez early on in the year. And like you said, secondly, where are you going to play him?
Mm-hmm.
Let him get an entire year or the majority of the year at AAA and then give him a chance in September to come up. But, you know, if he's not going to come up and play every single inning of every game, it's not going to be worth his while.
Yep.
So, God forbid there's an injury to one of those people. That's the only scenario that I can see them bringing him up anytime soon. Again, it's a financial decision that I don't think they want to get that clock started too early on him.
And to close out this interview, I'm going to ask how you would have been scouting on me, because I stopped playing baseball in the eighth grade, but I'm 5'2", so I had a really small strike zone. What do you do with guys with really small strike zones?
Well, whoever was the catcher for Eddie Goodell, I guess you could go and talk to him. But you'd probably be a second baseman, and I would have to challenge you and see if you could get around on a good fastball first and foremost.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mike, for joining us again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Mother's Day as well.
Have a good day.
Absolutely. You too. Again, the Royals have a really solid opportunity today to put together a series win against a good baseball team. I agree with what these guys said today. I think it's going to be up to the top of the lineup to really take advantage of this new guy of the Phillies. I think that they can do that. I think if they fail to score runs in the first three or four innings and give themselves a lead, I think Curtis really nailed it. You know, they need to get a 3-1, 4-run lead, something like that early on in this game, and they're going to have a really solid opportunity. If they can't score on this guy early, I think the Royals could be in trouble. Junis hasn't been completely, you know, himself. He had a couple good games, but other than that, his walks have been up. He's been giving up home runs. He's kind of a home run guy. But the Royals do have a good opportunity to win today. There is a chance. It is solid. I hope that there isn't a bunch of rain delay today. That would be terrible. And I hope everyone has an excellent rest of the Mother's Day. It's unfortunate because I have the best mom. So, you know, you'll have to, you know, at best, you're at second place. But thank you for joining me on Boulevard Baseball tonight. It's been Michael DiMaggio, who has been pushing the buttons. He's done an excellent job. I am Sean Collins. Thank you for joining us.